Meeting to order. January 10th, American Rent Flood Control meeting, and we do have a quorum. Any comments from the public on non-agenda items? Okay, and then we'll move to the consent calendar. Anything that needs to be removed from the consent calendar?
I don't have anything that I wanted to talk about on the consent calendar.
Okay, then entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve.
I've got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's consent calendar. On to accounts payable and general fund expenses. Any questions or comments on those items?
None for me.
Is anything that you'd like to highlight, Tim?
Well, there was a big expense at Riverview International, trying to get our international dump truck back in order. It's about 10 years old, so it required a real significant amount of maintenance in the computer system and whatnot.
Yeah,
so we were prepared to answer questions about that
$7,000. What specifically was repaired?
The computer system and then the air system.
Yeah, the air system runs the brake system, so mm-hmm. we had a major leak on it and we're losing air in our air brake system really fast. And then the computer, it wasn't registering something right with our cooling system, so mm-hmm. the fan would constantly kick on and we couldn't drive the truck. So they had to replace the computer on it and see if it solved the problem.
But the dump truck itself, we paid about $120,000, $130,000 for. So as an overall percentage of the value of that dump truck, I think $7,000 is definitely worth it to keep it in good shape.
A new one would probably be even more today.
Yeah, absolutely. We use it all the time.
We keep it for 30 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Any comments from the public on number three? Okay, I'll entertain a motion on item number three.
I'll second.
Motion second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Moving right along. All right. Number four, Arcade Creek Erosion Design.
Yes.
Yeah.
MBK scope of work.
And we have Mike Kinette from MBK with us today. He is a geotechnical engineer and design engineer that's going to hopefully be helping us solve this problem we have in Arcade Creek. We've spoken about this in the past a little bit, that there was an issue with Arcade Creek and the erosion. And the present request to the board is that we approve the scope of work for MBK to do the design and permitting, and we'll split the cost with Safeco for this element to do the design and permitting to prepare us to get contracts ready to award to do the construction out there. And then once we get to completion of that stage, hopefully our district can acquire more of the FMAP funding to actually pay for the construction. And either we would do the construction in-house or perhaps, you know, if possible, hire a contractor. I think we have to wait and see what the designs end up being before we know, you know, fully if our team can do it in-house or if we can do some of the sites or if we hire a contractor to do some of the sites. But we're at the front end of all of that, and so today I thought maybe we could talk about the nature of the erosion. I've got a staff report in your packet, and then Mike has a slide that he brought that he can show you the location of the erosion. So at this time, we'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have.
I'd like to hear, why don't you explain the scope of work, and then I'd also like to hear in more detail from Mike what specifically MBK will be doing in this phase.
Sure.
And then potentially what the long-term what a solution would entail, how
absolutely
detailed, you know, intricate, how expensive that might be. So go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, so we have long-term persistent erosion in Arcade Creek. It's a very narrow channel where the levees are very close to each other, and oftentimes during the summer months, the river almost dries up. But as soon as you get a rain event over Roseville or North Sacramento, all that water comes crashing down and collides at Arcade Creek and just goes ripping through the channel, and the level of the creek can raise about 10 feet in a day. And then it goes right back down again. So what you get is very swift moving water very frequently. This isn't the 100-year storm or that type of event. This is a very frequent event that happens, like, you know, a 5-year storm, 10-year storm, are very dangerous and very damaging to Arcade Creek. And over many decades, what we found is that causes the low flow channel to go downward. It sinks in elevation, and it drops the bed of the channel lower and lower and lower, which causes a vertical bank up adjacent to the levees. And in your staff report, I drew a picture of what we're experiencing here. And when the system was built, the low flow channel was pretty high, and it looked like a normal levee toe. But as that low flow channel keeps dropping and dropping and dropping, we're getting this vertical cut that in some cases, because there is a slight meander to the channel, it gets dangerously close to the levee prism. And in some cases, we believe in these four locations, actually it looks more like six according to how you characterize it by Mike's drawing there.
And so is that dashed line, does that mean the levee has eroded there, or that's ideally where...
When you project a levee prism, what engineers do is they take the crown hinge point and they follow the levee slope and project downward, and anything that intersects that projection is considered to be cutting into the levee prism. And in this case, we've seen a few cases where we believe that riverbank has either by widening or downcutting has encroached into the levee prism, and we need to do something to reinforce or bolster the toe of the levee, and in some cases completely replace the toe, depending on what the engineers decide. So since there is a slight meander, just a little bit of wiggle back and forth of this low flow channel, that's where we're seeing it cut into the toe of the levee. And it's all on the north levee, according to this picture that's on your screen. Mm-hmm. And so what we need to do is go and reinforce those sections so that the river or the creek doesn't continue to migrate and further deteriorate the levee in those cases. It seems like the solution here is typically something like rock, but we could be open to a biotechnical fix, more of a soft fix where you do woven brush mattresses or something like that.
Let's talk about the extent of the work itself, and then we can maybe get into more of that. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Can we hear from
Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. So exactly what Tim mentioned. So this is erosion in the channel bank down into the channel bed. These were identified as part of the North Area Streams project. So during construction, it was observed that there's some bank erosion, and the contractor engineer at the time had a concern that these were into the bank close enough that project may be impacted by it in the long term. We are part of that project, and so we came out to assess with the district these six or so sites. And that's exactly it. They're along the outside of a bend in a narrow, flashy channel. And so they're kind of just spot fix areas. It's kind of like a what we typically see maintenance practice or a small project fix, but just small bits of scour that's occurred at the toe of the channel, within the channel. Most of these are 100, 200 feet long. They're spread out just a little bit from each other, but they're somewhat continuous. So we went out, took a look, and have prepared a general scope of work to help the district design and permit and document these. The big thing here is that they're within the channel, and so we want to make sure we get the appropriate permitting. Like Tim said, it's tends to be a dry channel in the summer. It's pretty flashy, and so we wouldn't anticipate in-water work, but there is in-channel work. And so we want to make sure we're coordinating with the appropriate regulatory agencies and permitting and such. So that's kind of, that speaks to our scope. I believe we have three tasks. The first one is an additional site visit. We'll do a little bit of surveying to make sure we know the full extents of the erosion and can properly design the fix. We may want to meet with a contractor in the district just to kind of understand constructability. Because of the location, we want to make sure we understand access, we can properly estimate that, and how a contractor would eventually get in and do this work in the most efficient way possible. So that's kind of our task one, is just an initial assessment to make sure we fully understand what's going on, get our survey data. Task two is to prepare the preliminary designs. It's usually what we call about a 30%, and that's enough to get our sub-consultant, GEI, to help with environmental documentation and permits. So once they have kind of a scope of work from us on what the project description would be, they can start doing that necessary documentation and draft permitting. Because like I said, we want to make sure we coordinate with all the right agencies here. So that's our task two, just our initial design and documentation. And then based on all of that, task three is the 90% in final designs, where, like Tim said, we've kind of considered a few alternatives, rock versus non-rock, what can we do? We have our draft environmental documents and permits, and can go ahead and submit, you know, share those with the district again, and decide if the district wants to submit those for public review, for the to obtain the permits and to move forward. So that's kind of our basic task, is to go through the field work, the engineering, environmental documentation, and permitting to get a solution to address these erosion sites. And really, it's about protecting the bank, keeping the bank where it is, and protecting the investment of the North Area Streams project. But it does kind of fall under a, it's not a huge erosion site. This is not like what's on the American River that the Corps is doing, where big planting benches and all this. This is more the maintenance end of things. Like Tim said, district typically could be capable. We'll work with the district on the designs, or a contractor could do it. That's kind of the basis of what we're looking at.
Comments or questions for Tim or Mike?
If we were up to the state, when we go up to the state grant funding after we have everything permitted and planned, is there any reimbursement for the planning dollars we put into it, or is that sort of our obligation because of our role in the process?
I don't know definitively, but I believe that the grant just pays for construction.
Okay. And then if we were to do the construction, it's a reimbursement. If we get a contractor, it pays for the contractor.
Actually, FMAP gives you the money up front. Most of the other grants are reimbursements, but FMAP has been giving you the money up front.
So would 100% of the, maybe not the planning, you need to get back to us on that, but on the of the actual work itself, will that be 100% be
the
reimbursed via grant?
The state determines what are eligible costs under FMAP, and how they make that determination is a little bit of a mystery to most folks. We applied for FMAP funding for what we believed was $533,000 of eligible costs, and they looked at our budget and our operating expenses and only said we were eligible for $219,000 this year. So they have a metric that they use to determine if your costs are eligible, and we would make the argument that all of these costs should be eligible, but I can't make any definitive statements for how the state would weigh in on that.
And from the cost estimate, I see in our staff packet that there's, you know, and I know it could vary depending on the number of hours and who's doing what, but $130,000 roughly for the scope of work for MBK. And then there's an attachment with $50,000 for GEI. So that is that in addition to the $130,000?
I believe that should include GEI. Usually when we present these scopes, it's everybody's work and time.
Oh, it says subs 52,
yeah.
So that kind of almost matches up. Okay.
I believe that's the total scope is the $130,000 inclusive of our subs consultant.
And then what, if it may be difficult to, you know, to pin down, but what would you guys, you folks, estimate the construction cost to be after this phase of design and planning and permitting? What would the remainder of the project, what would you estimate
the cost
to be? Just
a quick count here and see what I can come up with.
Yeah, it depends on how much we can do in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because if we're going to do all of that with a contractor, I would throw out between $200,000 and $400,000. If we do it in-house, it would be half that.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about this because you seem fairly confident about the state grant, and it's just a matter of what will be reimbursed and what won't. But if it's as murky as you say, I think it's difficult for us to commit to, you know, $500,000 plus capital project, not knowing if we're actually going to be reimbursed or not.
Hmm.
So what? Did you say a number?
Yeah, that's the ballpark. I just did a quick calc based on some of our normal, but that's about right. One thing I should have mentioned too is our scopes cost shared with Safeco, and we handled that on our end. I don't know if they've discussed the construction with you or not.
We talked with Safeco, and the plan, and Rick helped us propose the plan, was, as we stated, let's split the cost of design and have our intention be that get the state grant funding to do the construction. We looked at possibly seeing if the Corps would just do this as one of their projects, but when you solicit the Corps to do a project in your district, oftentimes that gets complicated, and it brings in other kind of entanglements and costs and challenges in O&M agreements and whatnot. So we thought this would be the most expeditious approach. So I believe somebody needs to address the erosion, and the three players here would be either the Corps, the state, or the locals. The way the state says that they participate is through grants. So if you ask the state to do anything, they don't actually do construction anymore. They do grants now. So typically the way things have been effectively completed in our region is, you know, Safeco gets EIP funding or UFER funding or some sort of grant money from the state, and so that the state and Safeco collaborate, or the state and the locals collaborate to do something. In this case, since Safeco did the major capital improvements, the structural improvements with the slurry wall, I think they see bank erosion as more of an O&M obligation, but they're willing to help us for the cost of the design.
David?
Yeah. Cyril, sort of jumping ahead a little bit. You're concerned, you know, are we going to commit ourselves mm-hmm. here? And the board has got full discretion. I mean, you could have the design done, and then we can go out to bid, because we probably have to go out to bid. And you can then reject all bids. And you can simply say, it's going to be $500,000 or $600,000. We don't have that money. Fine, we're done. And then we can come back in a year or two, because it's not going to change that much. Mm-hmm. And so you have a lot of discretion as to when and how you want to do this. You could also, after the design, I'll look at Tim and Mike and make sure that's correct. You could then say, okay, we think we could do these elements, or maybe these locations, and we would want a contractor to do those, and you only have to bid the latter. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things you could do, and you can very much, until somebody starts putting a spade in the ground, you can control the costs.
Right.
And you could do it over several years or whatever you want.
And at what point in the timeline, just logistically, at what point in the timeline would we know what the extent of grant funding would be, and also know what Safeco's cost share would be with us?
Well, right now we know Safeco's cost share. They would be willing to split these design and permitting costs 50%.
Construction.
They have not indicated they would split any of the construction costs. Okay. They want us to go after grant funding for that. Typically, the FMAP grant has been issued in basically 1 year intervals. The first year was already done and everything was paid for. We are in line for the second year, which starts this month. So this would be putting us in place. Hopefully FMAP is still available for 2021, and we would try to be ready to get the 2021 money. We don't know how much they would have allocated for 2021. I think they start giving you indicators about 4 months out, something like that, to tell you how big the pot of money is for FMAP. Like, we know that this year FMAP is about $8 or $9 million total.
Mm-hmm. And it's a board. We wouldn't be asked to authorize that, the construction funding, until we know what the grant funding
yeah.
is going to be. And just hypothetically, if the grant funding isn't at a level that we're comfortable with, would these plans still hold up if it's a year out or 2 years out, or would we have to go back and do this again?
Depends on if the sites worsen. If we get a flood event, then the condition of the banks could get exacerbated. But I think that these plans could be good for a couple years.
Yeah.
Put them on the shelf and wait for funding.
Yeah, and that's one thing we work into our documents and permitting is what that period is. Some of the permits are kind of like a 5-year. Mm-hmm. So we write something like that in to get the maximum out of the permit, in case it's a few years down the road to try and cover the district.
Yeah, that gives me more. Go ahead, Tika.
So in the preliminary, were you able to kind of maybe prioritize, like see where the worst sections of erosion are. I mean, if it does come down to, you know, funding, maybe then it'll be, okay, well, this has to be done now, and these two can wait a couple years.
We haven't done any official prioritization yet. We did. We looked at them. They're all pretty similar.
They
are bad. I mean, yeah, they're all worth looking at. I mean, they made the list, you know. So we haven't taken a look at which ones we prioritize over others. We might look at linear foot cost in that kind of a prioritization just to see what's most efficient if you want to cover them over a period of time or multiple projects or just, you know, have the district hit a few each year or something. We could look at that.
Okay, and so my second question then is, do we, I might have lost it. Is there a chance that, let's say we do prioritize, and then in a couple of years, there's 7 and 8, you know, there's spot 7 and 8 that now are at a higher risk than what we initially see here. Is that a possibility that we should be aware of?
The entire channel is eroded.
Okay, and then
from Rio Linda, Marysville to Rio Linda, the entire channel is downcut like that drawing. These are just the cases where the downcutting has meandered too close to the levee prism. So the whole channel, there needs to be a systematic project to go in and revamp the entire Arcade Creek, and I just don't know how something that large scale could get off the ground without the Corps doing a GRR on it.
And so this is our
Band-Aid.
Bandage for making sure that we don't lose
the entire body. Yeah, unfortunately. I wish I could say that this project is going to give us another 50 years life out of the Arcade Creek facility, but I think it's a bad design to stick levees that close together on such a flashy stream.
So I,
any comments?
Okay. So I'm with, thank you for answering all the questions we all had. But what gives me comfort is knowing that these plans will hold up over time, that we'll know what the funding is before we're asked to commit district funds to the construction. But just want to, and this is a part of a motion, but just want that to be, you know, part of our thought process is that we'll be committing funds only we'll be committing district funds only once we know what kind of reimbursement
and what the cost will be too. Yeah,
and the cost and what part is going to go to the contractor and do an outstanding.
Yeah, Cyril, just for the board's information, when I work with a lot of different flood control agencies, and this is a very common process where you can sort of see there's a problem. And like, okay, the very first thing we need to do is to do some engineering. Then we got to figure out, Tamika, as you were saying, where are the real worst spots? And then how do we have enough money to, either on our own or from grant funding, to be able to address those in a sort of systematic way? And typically, that process takes 3 to 4 to 5 years because nobody's got the money to be able to do these sorts of projects immediately. Mm-hmm. And there's a grant process. Mm-hmm. There's the design process. There's the environmental process. When you add it up, it's usually a 3, 4, 5 year process to do these sorts of things. And so, just so I know that the board is kind of unqueasy about it all, but yeah, this is, unfortunately, it would be better if we had a big project and everything else, but this is a very common process. So, yeah, it's not the best thing, but it's what it is.
And just to clarify, with the cost share from Safeca, who for this phase, this portion, they'd be splitting with us, which I appreciate. Does that mean that the $130,000, the estimated amount that we'll be outlaying is $130,000 or $65,000?
Okay. Yeah, we'll split the $130,000 with Safeca.
Okay, so with all of that as a bit of like staff direction or just kind of clarity of knowing the financial picture before we move to the next phase, I'm happy to move it.
Great.
I second.
So motion and a second. Any further discussion? Any comments from the public? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
We appreciate you. Welcome to stay or leave if you'd like, whatever. But appreciate you being here and providing information. Okay, on to item five, the review of the audio recording policy. Before we address this item, one thought that I had when I was reviewing the agenda is that I know that this, one of the trustees that's not here, Ray, that this is, essentially it was per her suggestion that we started mm-hmm. this. And so I'm wondering if this is something, we can discuss it now, but as far as taking action, if it's something that we might want to push out to the next meeting so that she's able to participate in the discussion.
That's a good courtesy yeah. to Ray.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we want to discuss today, or would we prefer to just put this on the agenda for February? Okay, so we're going to move item five to February and review and action at that time. Item six, district priorities for 2020. Tim.
Yeah, each year I like to provide the board a forecast of what I see are the important topics looming in our very near future and challenges so that they don't catch us off guard. What I believe we should be focusing on, or some items are time sensitive that we have to address before the year is over. I could just summarize the five items for this year, and then I can go into any detail if you want to talk specifically about them. But the five items are the board's choice to transition to bi-district elections. We've got our headquarters facility re-roof project underway, and that'll come to completion this year. State DDBR grant funded activities, time sensitive expenditure of funds, and a significant amount of funds this year. We've got the Arcade Creek erosion, and then the American River erosion contracts that the Corps will be conducting. And then the homeless camp operation and maintenance standards. I think we need to put something in writing how we work around the homeless camps.
Yeah. Would you like Tim to go into any more detail on any of the priorities?
I think it's a good set.
Okay.
It's really relevant.
Should keep our hands full.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you doing it. I think it's good for us to have priorities and an outlook. And it seems to be an extension of what we've been discussing, in 2019. So, thank you. Thanks.
And I think mid-year, I'll give you an update on how I believe we're doing on all of those five things to kind of track it and make sure we're making headway and going to meet the deadlines that we've got set up for us.
I think that's great. Any action needed by us?
No, I think it's an information item.
Yeah, thank you.
Just one question. I'm just curious on the roof work.
Yeah.
We'd be probably in a cycle to do the construction this summer, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The designs are just about complete. I've got a meeting coming up with the architects and design engineers where we can put the finishing touches on the designs. And at that point, we'll present them to the board for your approval.
Okay.
And then we'll start putting together the bid documents to advertise.
Great.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be really neat.
Thank you, Tim. Sure. And a good lead-in into your general manager's report.
Okay, we start that one off with a meeting summary for meetings I attended in December to wrap up 2019. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to elaborate.
Any questions for Tim about any of the meetings, the meeting summary? Anything you'd like to highlight, Tim?
We had a very interesting meeting with the city. There's two deputy city managers that were at the meeting. One's Chris Conlon, and the other one was Hector Barone. And they were both very interested in some of the impacts some of the encampments are making on the levees, because they were made aware that the city had some damage on a levee down by on the Sacramento River, little pocket area, and it was an emergency repair going into flood season that they had to spend about $100,000 restoring a cut. It's about a 400-foot-long cut, 7 feet deep in some areas. And
can you say that again? 7 feet?
About 7 feet deep, the vertical cut made by digging, and the extent of it along the river was about 400 feet long.
Oh, wow.
And they got all the emergency approvals, and Deputy City Manager Barone saw that, and he saw the extent and how severe and how large the project was to repair it, and he said, this is what's going on here, and he was startled to find it's becoming more and more commonplace. And so we held this meeting that other levee maintenance agencies could weigh in on how commonplace is this becoming. And so we all shared our information. And just that week, I had a recent count from Scott and Ross of how many camps we have on the footprint. The city felt that they probably had about 10 camps. RD1000 had about 8 camps. The state had 0 camps. We had 296 camps.
Oh my gosh.
296 camps on our levees as of the Monday that I had the meeting. And so I was very thankful these two guys went out and documented and mapped where all these camps are. And that's becoming a common occurrence for us. And so we're seeing that our levee system is kind of now overlaying with this other population that's cohabitating with us on our levees. And we're trying to still do the same level of service and maintenance, tiptoeing around all these other people that now live on the levee system. And it's growing by leaps and bounds. That's why I think we need to institute some sort of standards so we kind of at least hold the line. You know, what are the triggering incidents that cause us to move a camp so that we can repair the damage? Because right now, Ross, Scott, and I don't really know what rises to the level of needing to call law enforcement to move a camp, because we try to be very sensitive to the campers, but we're seeing that maybe we need to establish thresholds that if a cut is deeper than 18 inches, I think we got a call or something. We'll put it in writing and have the board formally adopt something like that.
Will that be part of that comprehensive policy?
It's starting to take shape. And the first priority is the safety of our employees, because we're starting to get some conflicts and some issues out there. But two would then be the condition of the levees. And then the third thing in that set of policies is a responsibility for trash removal. Because we did 230,000 pounds of trash removal last year, and that's pretty new. That's a new record for us.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it used to be about a tenth of that.
And just one typo in that on that meeting summary, is it says statues, to find statues of those statues.
Oh, yeah, okay. Statues would be nice and all, but not quite as helpful. Yeah.
No, okay. Thanks. That's helpful.
I have a comment on that after David.
David, go ahead.
I just had a piece of information for the board to underscore the importance of having these standards, because there's going to be, and there's already beginning to be down in Southern California, real concerns about relocation of campers in flood control channels. And law enforcement has, you know, been doing that. And in light of the Boise case, what is beginning to happen is there needs to be real clear standards. When do you move people? When is you can't? What's the rationale, et cetera? So the thing that Tim is beginning to talk about here is really going to be necessary. We're a bit ahead of the curve. But I think in a year or so, if we don't have what he's talking about, we'll be putting our folks at risk. Mm-hmm. So we need to get on top of this.
So, thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, David. I think that's really helpful to know that there is some background also going on in Southern California. Once we have the standards, even in draft form, I'd be interested in seeing how we can maybe re-engage the city and the county, because we rely on them for both law enforcement support and also other ancillary services, and they have a role in addressing this issue.
Absolutely.
I'm still thinking out loud whether we start with the senior city staff, like deputy city managers, or you start with the elected officials, but trying to get them to like take it to them and say, this is what we have, and we would like your endorsement, we would like your support to recognize it, that this is absolutely critical, that we're trying to come up with standards so that we can do our job. But we have this, you know, 296 or 286 site problem that's going to keep getting worse. I mean, like, that's a shocking number.
Yeah.
I think that it's like the perfect opportunity for us to highlight how extreme this is for the city and the county, so that they can, I don't know if they're going to be taking any action, but I think that it's helpful to have them recognizing that they can't, you know, that the problem that we have is not ours and ours alone. Yeah. It's their problem too.
Yeah, I'm really curious at how they're measuring their camps. You know, the state having none, the city having, what, 20-something, the county having in the teens, which is, we know that's not accurate. I mean, when you just drive down, so...
Well, we're talking a long levee, so the group was a levee-focused meeting, It was just specific to levees, so we didn't have county there, and the county parks is dealing with a massive amount, and then the city is dealing with massive amounts elsewhere, but we were only talking with city utilities, and we were talking specifically how many camps are on your levees.
Mm-hmm. And down in the pocket, that's...
Yeah, they don't get a lot of camps on the levee in the pocket, at least that's what this Casey Lund was saying. And maybe they were there, but they're off the levee footprint.
Okay.
Further into the channel, and those numbers could change as the water comes up and people migrate.
Can I add to that too? The count we did in a very conservative count, just sticking right toward the water, but we didn't also count the ones that are further out into the channel. That's just the 296 we counted.
On the toe.
Yeah.
On the toe.
Or slope. Yes. Or now we're finding a lot on the crown. They're blocking the crown roadway. One individual, we have gates that cross the crown roadway,
mm-hmm.
and one individual used our gate to drape the tarp and the tent and whatnot and would not move. And Ross, definitely I told Ross, that one has to go, because even for fire and emergency access vehicles, you can't have blocking of the crown roadway or a gate.
Yeah, and talking with city police yesterday for their POP officer, there's only 6 POP officers for the homeless in all through Sacramento region.
For the city.
That's all there is.
6. Do you get the sense, and it might be difficult to gauge, but do you get the sense that the homeless and the homeless campers on the levee, that they feel as if they won't be moved, that they can't be moved? I mean, because it seems pretty bold. I think the reason they cut the notch on the levee is to hide from, you know...
Well, they like the flat spot.
View in,
the flat spot for all the... Their beds and everything like that.
But does it seem as if they feel entitled to be there, stay there, and there isn't much fear that they'll be moved?
No, because they know what a levee is. They know about the digging. They're getting it. I mean, Scott's out there with our crews reminding them about what they need to, the campers need to do. And they know they're in an area that they will be in a way that they will have to move. But right now, since the water's coming up, they're moving up, and then they'll move back into the channel.
Well, it seems like it got worse after the Boise decision, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They used to be more mobile in the disposition and the setup of their camp. And since the Boise decision, I think word spread that they couldn't be kicked off, and they started making more permanent structures in the levees with stilts. We see a lot of stilts now with flat decking.
I think in the middle of the channel, they know that the middle of the channel, they know that that's their home, and they can't be moved. They make permanent housing, we call it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
I have a feeling that these meetings are going to continue to be on that summer every month. So thanks for highlighting that.
Are you attending any of the statewide meetings on homelessness?
I have not. Yeah.
Okay.
I know that our mayor, Mayor Steinberg, is the governor's head of that task force, and I think they're more focused on solving the housing issue, you know, whereas we're more kind of thrust into the housekeeping-ish side of the issue, where we're doing the removal of all the generated waste and stuff, and cleanup of the cuts and the damage.
And our need is more immediate.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
Next item is the FMAP grant update. We submitted all the signed documents, and they state determined we're eligible for $219,000. And the items we submitted for was new equipment and hazardous tree removal. So those are two very big ticket items for us, so that's going to be really helpful. We're hoping to get a new backhoe, a new chipper. Our chipper is over 20 years old. And whenever people see it, they think it should be in a museum, but it still works. But we could do much better with a new model, more efficient. And then we're also thinking it was the chipper, and then you were also wanting a new tractor.
5300.
Replace the 5300 because of the air quality tiering. We're going to have to phase it out because it doesn't meet modern air quality standard. Mm-hmm. It still runs great, but I don't even think we can sell it in California anymore, right?
It'll be sold through the auctioneer.
Auction. We'll have to sell through an auction.
I'm sorry, what piece of equipment is that? The chipper?
It's a tractor.
Okay.
It's a little open cab, four-wheel drive tractor, but it just does everything for us. The new model, we'd probably have to get a closed cab, though, because of new OSHA standards for particulates and whatnot, and air conditioning and whatnot. But it would be nice to replace those three pieces of equipment and then use the leftover money for some of our hazardous trees over at Cal Expo that we've just been whittling away at those eucalyptus over there. So that should, I'll have an update for you next month. We might even have the money by next month.
Great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Roof design update. I mentioned earlier that the designs are nearly complete, so maybe next month I can bring those back to you for approval and we can start talking about advertising for a new roof. And then on the hydrologic conditions, I apologize, but the site where I get all the information from the state at CDEC seems to be down, and I have not been able... Oh, it's back up. We're in good shape.
Exciting.
This is good. I kind of want to know. This is stuff we like to know. So here are the reservoir levels of all of our Northern California reservoirs. They're all below conservation stage where they're supposed to be, but you know we're almost at conservation at Folsom. So here is Folsom, 50% of total capacity. It's 73,000 acre feet below conservation right now. And here is the storage diagram. We're almost exactly at average for this time of year. That's pretty good. It's supposed to get a little bit of rain next week. And then on our river stages, we can go look at I Street. I try to usually have all this queued up before you have to sit here and watch me surf the internet, so I do apologize. But it's that easy to get I Street. This is the guidance plot. What they anticipate, this little bit of rain coming next week is not going to have a giant effect on the stage of Sacramento River. We're currently at about 7.3 feet above sea level. And then that's all I've got. Our next board meeting will be February 14th on Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day, it's President's Weekend. Does that present an issue for anyone?
No.
Okay. I won't ask if it's the Valentine's Day.
President's Weekend, Valentine's.
Cyril, we all love each other.
Yes. We'll have candies.
Okay, David.
Just one item. My staff's working with Tim. We've identified two demographers, demographic firms, to begin to do the analysis that we would need to move to districts. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to get proposals from them in the next month to bring to you for at least a preliminary review in February. We can begin to get on the docket. Mm-hmm. Because our concern is that with the new census data and everything that's happening, everybody's going to want to do this.
Yeah.
So better to get ahead of the curve, get that contract lined up and everything else. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're working on right now.
Okay. I was really happy to get that call from Austin, too. He's really on the ball.
Mm-hmm. Malene?
I have nothing to report.
Great report.
Can we cue up the phones?
Thank you.
Just
Ross.
Hit that button right down here. That part you got it open, Ross. Hit this button.
No.
That one. Hit that. There you go. Just double click.
So Scott and the crew has been pretty busy. This is in the north area of Rio Linda. This is a SAFCA levee that was probably built in, what, 95? And the roadway we have out here is private property, and the gentleman here has been calling me for the last year about he has problems with trespassers coming through his property, and he can't stop it, because this is all open field. This is all Sac County property, and this is Sacramento County floodplain. But we maintain this small levee here at G Street, and there's a private road that comes in, and we have no easement rights in there, because we looked it up, and he looked it up under documentations. So he wanted to put a fence across there to keep the trespassers out. So we went ahead and said we'll go ahead and build you a gate here just to keep the trespassers out for him, and we'll have access to the gate. And he is very happy with it, because we need to have access into this area to take care of the levee, also to do maintenance. We also have a outfall right here that we need to maintain. So he's more than worked with us. He's very happy with us. This is afterwards of the gate when it's done.
Looks nice.
We did all this ourselves in-house. We did the cyclone fencing. Eric built the gates for us. So just like a professional contracting company. So the $2,000 bill you saw from Benson's is pretty cheap compared to a contractor coming in.
He made those gates?
He made the gates.
Where is that, Bruce?
G Street in Rio Linda. It's a small little levee that we maintain.
Dry Creek floodway up in the way far north.
So we have to do our maintenance in here because we have a lot of residential housing back here. So now the trespassers are topping over the levee and going through these backyards. So that's what happens. So now this is some of the chipping we've been doing. This is over here at Unit 4 by Watt Avenue on the south side. And we had a high vegetation here that the vegetation is coming encroaching onto the levee, so we have to take care of this for visibility.
There's our ancient chipper.
This is very labor intensive for all the crew out there. We have to haul all this debris up the hill. This is afterwards, after we got it done, very professionally done. They still gives a privacy screen for the homeowners.
Wow. Looks good.
Yeah, they did a good job out there. This is afterwards. You can see David's been trimming all day, but he got it done. It looks very nice.
Those trees are too close to the levee, and there's 30 years of documentation about them trying to get the permit to put the trees there, and they put them in the wrong spot, and the state was not happy but still allowed it, and they were just supposed to keep it trimmed up for all of time. Otherwise, they lose their trees, and that has been an issue for us for many, many, many years. So finally, our guys took it into their own hands to clean it up because we need visibility down a levee and the tow.
This landowner right there, is that an apartment complex?
Yeah. So we want to be good neighbors. Mm-hmm. We always want to be good neighbors, but this is a really sticky wicket.
But that's part of our easement. I think County Parks property goes right around here somewhere, but still on our easements. So we're spraying, just doing our annual spraying. Gilbert's up there doing spraying, loading up the chemicals and water. This is over at Sac State. We've been doing cleanup with the sheriff's buses. This is the bill you saw. We've been getting a lot of good work out of them. This area at Sac State by the new dorms, we have never seen the bare ground there before. It's in pine needles and debris. Mm. We're finally down to dirt. So now we can really see what goes on down there. So we have any issues with, you know, rodents, we can see it now. It looks really good. This is how the trail is blocked on top at Sac State.
Brian would love that photo.
Yeah, he would like that photo. But that's the area we need. And, you know, Scott came up with this method of dragging up these bags up the hill, and then the sheriff work crew just goes out there and picks it up, cleans it up for us. So this is afterwards. This is how it looks now. This used to be nothing but pine needles and debris. You can never see the bottom toe row there, or even the toe.
It looks full of needles.
So it looks really nice. This is some of the debris we had to cut off the fence line here. It's a lot of work. You see we have nearly no access to get in. Everything has to be hauled up the hill. So we use sheriff work buses for that. The sheriff work bus has been working out great for us.
Good here.
This is afterwards. We used our new Bobcat in there to haul a lot of debris out also. The gentleman did a very good job by not cutting into the toe of the levee here. He wheel packed it all back down. Looks really nice. This is clean with the dorms. This is the way a levee should look. This is part of the work we did with the Bobcat. So you can see we don't have much space to work in there. There's not much area to work, but we managed to get inside this area by Sac State.
Pretty steep.
Yeah, it's a steep, high levee. And there is our area after we're done with it. This was all pine needles and brush. You could never see the toe. It's the first time we saw it in many years. This is another area Sac State we've been working on. Sac State is very happy with us. Clean up some of their stuff for them too. We also helped them out. This is an erosion site that was marked that we'll have to do repair next year. This is a walking path. So next year we'll go along and fill in all these debris.
Maybe build a mini ramp right there?
There's a lot of mini ramps out there.
Yeah, because we've been taking those erosion damage cuts and actually building onto the levee by adding fill a miniature ramp, not wide enough for a vehicle, but wide enough for foot traffic. And then you don't get those erosion cuts anymore. But we're building them slowly but surely all over the district.
Yeah. So this is on the state's inspection list that has to be repaired. So we'll be repairing that this summer. This is also an area by the new science building that the Sac State built. Again, you see it's very hard to work in it because we have a cyclone fence. And so a lot of it's all hand manual labor. Gilbert's getting ready to go down there and cut all that grass down. We've got to have visibility. So you can see that a lot of our areas are pretty urban and very labor intensive. A lot of hand work. This is Sheriff Brooks' buses again working over there by, what is that building?
The Aquaculture Center?
Yep. So that's Sheriff Work buses doing a great job. This is a good crew here. This is afterwards we're done. This was a high rodent area with squirrels. We had nothing. This used to be like a little squirrel city in here.
We might want to write those guys a thank you letter. That is looking so good.
See how thick the leaves are on this side? That's how thick the leaves were on this side, on our side. But this was a high rodent area, and Gilbert's managed to correct a lot of the rodent population here, squirrels. So it's worked out pretty well. So now we got better visibility in here. We're over here cutting my stack state again by the trees. We took down this fence here about 2 years ago. We added rock in here. And I was talking to the facilitator for Sac State. He was more than happy. We also cleaned up these trees for him, trimmed up all the suckers, and cleaned up the bottom area for him. So we went ahead and did that for Sac State because they've been a pretty good partner with us and worked with us.
Who do you interface with when you're saying that we get the positive feedback?
Darren Oakey. He manages all the Sac State facilities and grounds. Good guy to work with.
He's very good.
Mm-hmm. Easy to work with. So this is the area after we're done. It's very clean. You couldn't even see the ground before, so now we have pretty good access to what goes on here. These are some of the areas we work. This is unit 4 by the storage facilities. We had a hard problem with the tumbleweeds and high vegetation down here. This is some of the dogs we deal with out here, and this is the tent we worked around by the storage right here, about 160. This is the area over here between the almond growers and Bell. This is some of the area of trash we cleaned up. We did vegetation removal. You can see our prism of our toe, and there's not much toe here left. But this is some of the cuts we have that we'll have to probably have to look at in the future. That whole area is nothing but cuts, but a lot of them are pretty far away from the levee. But if these were closer, I was telling you, if any of these are closer, we would have more than 400 feet of cuts.
Yeah.
Tremendous big cuts in this area right here.
Luckily, there's a little bit of a waterside berm, so that they're cutting in the berm, they're not cutting into the levee.
But you see where our levee is right here, and they're starting to cut into it. We made contact with this lady here, and she moved. We got to know her pretty well, but she moved away. But this is also a cut they have made for years right here. So that's something that might have to be addressed later on in the spring. I will also work on the vegetation down here, too, with our robotic mower. So it's a lot of handwork again. But if we didn't take down the vegetation, we would never know what goes on down here.
Since we got the robot, we cut down all this anise that was there, and suddenly we found all these camps cutting into the levee.
Yeah.
So luckily the robot is helping us find more and more.
See the brush we have issues. To look through? We have to look through this brush, physically walk down the slope to look in there and start seeing what's bad down in there, because the kind of camps hide in there. So we'll do that more in the spring again. This is the area after. This was all vegetation growth that came out to here. These were all camps that PD had moved along. And there's still some camps in here, but we raised up all the trees for visibility and cleaned up. This whole road was full of camps, too.
That's right by the Smud property.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, Smud property, that's a whole
different... There's Deller right here, then Smud.
Right where the transmission towers are, they go over our...
Yeah. So that's some of the areas we work at. This is some of the cuts that are in that area. So yeah, we take away all the blackberry. This is what we expose out there, but it's far enough away from our levee toe. But this one next to our toe, we'll be dealing with a lot, more than what the city was dealing with, the 400 feet. That's a pretty long stretch by Bell. So that's what would happen if we were any farther away. Eric's been working on the dump truck. He added a new tailgate to our old dump truck here, so the brush would come out easier. He built this. Him and Luke built this together.
From scratch.
Luke is his helper. Luke has been a pretty good little fabricator, and Eric's been kind of guiding him along as his mentor. But he built this whole little tailgate here for our trucks.
Mm.
Very gifted man. And Luke should be very happy that this man is teaching him. Eric's working on all our equipment, so we don't have to bring it in. Very knowledgeable man there. And we're working on that. We're in the process of gutting our bathroom in the welding area. So Jose has went in here and epoxied the floor. We repainted. We'll put all new fixtures in there. I have updated pictures for next month. So that's all I got.
The bathroom never got touched as part of our renovation when we did the whole building. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give the bathroom about a 1.
It was pretty good. This morning, I was guys. Jane has a good space. I don't have to go back.
It's a guy's bathroom.
Question. Thanks, so Ross. When I first started, fantastic. You know, I think that was the meeting where we talked about, you know, we wanted to keep a tally of how much, you know, the camp removals, the trash removals, how much extra time and labor. Do you have, like, an estimate of when this year we'll get that tally, that report of how much extra the camping is costing us.
Me and Scott are going to do a census. We're going to go out every month and count the camps
okay.
that we would possibly have to move. Yesterday, talking to City PD, they want to know what what it would cost hourly to repair the area, so we'll have to keep that documented. I do keep a log on the crews we use, equipment we use, and the hours we use. I keep track of all the poundage of the trash, and I started for 2020.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How frequently would you like a report on that? Because we could give you the report at intervals to let you know.
Well, I think we started it right around when I was starting, so I would like to maybe see how much this has cost in a year.
Okay.
So far.
We can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's, I think, when we asked you to like really start documenting it, like to see just.
And it seems like everybody wants to know that number too, because oftentimes other agencies have that number, and so it's nice to know what the burden is, and is it being distributed amongst all the agencies, type of thing.
And is that something when we do go to say, you know, you had mentioned earlier that, you know, we ask for 500 and some odd thousand in the states, like that, you get to, you know, I mean, I think that these kind of numbers will help us get closer to our ask for what we in reality are doing.
Yeah.
And especially, again, like you had said, I think in your report, Ross, the you know, kind of going above and beyond, we weren't asked to do the trees, but it's taking, not just taking the cuts, the lemons, and making lemonade and creating these new walk paths, but it's also lessening crime by
visibility.
That visibility by trimming the trees and keeping the rodents down. Like, all of this extra is not what we're getting paid to do, but we're doing more with less. So I think having this great documentation would help us to kind of recoup some of those costs.
Okay, will do. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments from trustees? Anything from staff? Public? Ms. Jern.
Good meeting, sir.
Thank you. Thanks again, Mike. Yeah, that sure helped a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
See you guys. Thanks for having me. Thanks for sticking to you again.